Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I am so excited to be here for our sixth season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show, Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO, as we call it. And it is now one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. During the show, our storytellers share their coming out stories and then our improvisers bring them to life. Our podcast is a little different. We still have a storyteller share their stories, but instead of folks improvising, we talk about them. And I am absolutely so thrilled about not one, but two of my guests, both of them, all of my guests here with me today. I've known these two since March of 2016, and both of them played an integral part of my personal and professional and queer and Jewish identities at all the intersections and beyond. And so to get to be in conversation with both of them is an absolute privilege and treat. And so with that, Rabbi Becky Silverstein, he, him, believes in the power of community, Torah, and silliness in transforming the world. He strives to build a Jewish community and world that encourages and allows everyone to live a life that reflects their inherent divinity and dignity. Becky is a member of the faculty at Zvara, a traditionally radical yeshiva, where he is the co-director of the Trans Halakha Project. Joanna, or Joe Ware, she/her is an organizer, facilitator, educator, and currently serves as the founding executive director of the Jewish Liberation Fund. She has spent over a decade working with organizations inside and outside of the Jewish world to bring forth a more just, whole, and liberatory world. Joanna has worked as a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant, adaptive leadership teacher and practitioner, community organizer, and popular educator at the intersections of identity, power, leadership, and social justice. Joanna is a queer femme of Sephardic, Ashkenazi, and non-Jewish European roots from an interfaith family originally from San Diego. She now lives in Boston with her spouse, Diana, and their kiddo. Joe and Becky, welcome.
Oh, man. Thank you. I really missed the opportunity to shout out my kiddos. What a loss. I also live in Jamaica Plain with my spouse, Naomi, and our kiddos.
Okay. There you go.
I feel like Great. My bio is complete.
Complete. How are you both doing? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday.
Yeah.
I'm grateful. It's Shabbat. Yeah. Almost there.
Did you have, how were your Pesachs, your Passovers?
Mine was delightful. And also for the first time in, honestly, probably since I left home, I did zero planning or organizing of my Pesach experience. And deep gratitude to Becky and his spouse, Naomi, for holding it down. My family was traveling, and then my spouse had some health stuff going on, and I just did not have the bandwidth. So I just showed up places, had a couple of delightful chaotic seders, ate some matzah. It was great.
Amazing.
And you're welcome. We were glad to host. Yeah, really, really glad to host. Passover was sweet. I had a good amount of outdoor time and some good walks with folks who I hadn't connected with in a while. So that was just like a very nice feature of the time.
That's nice. And forgive this. This is like I'm not a parent. So like I don't even know if it's like an out of touch question, but are either of your kiddos old enough to do the four questions, or is that like next year or the year after? I have no clue.
I mean, Edie, if like we had prepped her, she's my 4-year-old, she would have been able to do them. Like if we had played them on repeat musically, like that's like a skill she has. But we did not get it together to do that this year. So she did not do the four questions. She did, however, stay up until everyone left the house, which I would say is maybe even a bigger accomplishment.
Yeah.
Yeah. My kiddo is 2. She not ready for the four questions yet. She did nail Dayenu by the end of Passover. which she then adapted for any word she could think of. So we were singing like dinosaurs to the tune of Dainu, just piggy, squirrel. Like she just was throwing words at us. She's like, sing Dainu, but all these words.
I love that. Something that I found like that's delightful in hanging out and spending a lot of time with my nibblings is their delight of like when we catch on to their game. So like anytime, you know, it's like any animal that your kiddo, you know, threw out, you obviously picked up on it and continued right away. But like, so like in, do you know what I'm saying? So like when I do that with my kid, if one of my nibblings starts a rhyming game and I immediately start rhyming with them, they're like amazed that I like am in there with them. And it's like, it's such like little things, but it's so fun.
Yeah.
Okay. The moment of truth. So we all have multiple coming into ourselves stories. We have multiple coming out stories. And I want to invite each of you to share one. And so, Becky, would you like to go first?
Yeah, sure. And for those listening along, Joe and I gave Dubs the choice of who would go first in the moment. So, yes, absolutely. And I'm going to switch which story I was going to tell. So now you can all wonder which I'm not telling.
Yes.
One of the things, well, maybe I'll just say explicitly because it hasn't come up yet that I'm a rabbi. I'm a non-binary trans rabbi, and was the first out rabbi to be hired at a conservative shul, which is cool, neat. Had lots of neat parts of that. But one of the things about my own story that I appreciate, having lived it, and I think is often unique in sharing it with other folks, is the ways in which my gender and sexuality development and my Jewish identity development really moved in concert with each other in really beautiful ways. And so there's not a lot of, you know, if I was going to tell my longer story, there's not a lot of like tension and wrestling with Judaism as I came out as trans or came out first as a lesbian and then as queer. So that's sort of the context for this story. And I'm thinking about it because in a month, it will be a decade. It'll be the 10-year anniversary of my ordination, which is banana pants.
That's like, wild.
How is it that I've been a rabbi for 10 years? I definitely don't feel that way. But such is life. Here we are. And so, you know, one of the things that was a question for me for ordination was, as it is for each of us every morning, what am I going to wear? And we know, like, for trans folks, sometimes that question can have, and for lots of other people, but I'm trans, so we'll talk about trans folks. That question can have a heightened level of importance, maybe anxiety, and then also like a heightened level of joy, right? And sort of sense of like really, real euphoria in putting on clothes that like really match a sense of self. So the question of what I was going to wear to ordination was a big deal. Like I didn't have anything that fit really nicely. I had lots of clothes that fit well. but I didn't like have a suit that fit nicely. And I wasn't sure like whether I wanted to wear a suit or whether I was going to go sort of like a mismatched pants and blazer. Any of these would have been fine. Was I going to wear a tie? Was I not going to wear a tie? And what I was going to do with my hair was a totally other question, in part because we had to wear graduation caps in the morning. And in the afternoon, the morning was like graduation where we got our master's degrees. And then in the afternoon, we had ordination where there was no such thing happening. So here I am like maybe 3 months out from ordination and it's like early, what is relationship timing? It's early-ish in my relationship with my spouse. We've been, I don't know, we'll put this in air quotes, hanging out for a while. We'll let people interpret that as they'd like. And the question is like, where are we going to go? What am I going to do? What am I going to wear? And Naomi really encouraged me to try and find a suit, and to buy sort of what would have been, what will be my first, what was, what will, would have, what is grammar? What was my first suit? And so I remember going to Men's Warehouse. I think I went by myself the first time. Maybe it wasn't Men's Warehouse. It was the one, if you're in Boston, near the Wegmans in Chestnut Hill. It's not Men's Warehouse. It's something else. Anyway, I had a lovely experience there. And I remember going and trying on a couple of suits and trying to figure out what color I wanted. I got a black suit. I would not do that again. Actually, I would have gone for navy or gray, but what did I know as my 32-year-old, like barely aware of colors and how I wanted to look self? So I went shopping, tried on a whole bunch of different shirts and ties and suits, and placed an order to be picked up later to be, tailored as things need to be. And I just remember the day of being there and going to pick it up, and Naomi coming with me and putting on my suit and, in the dressing room and coming out of the dressing room and looking in the mirror and being like, oh, wow, like I feel like a rabbi now. Like I really feel like this is right. This is me. And just like really, I've been thinking a lot this week about crying and moments of tearing up. That's always the world, but it feels especially that way in this moment. And just like remember sort of tearing up and being so relieved that it looked okay. And also just like a real feeling of like gender euphoria and feeling like, oh yeah, this is gonna be who I am when I wear this suit. There's lots of other contexts that might make that more meaningful, but that's the story.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that. when you've mentioned gender euphoria a few times, what does that look, feel, sound, all the things? What for you, what does that feel like? What does that mean?
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's sort of funny because I actually don't usually go there first. It's not like my first access point into the world, like a sense of like pleasure or joy. But here we are, feeling both of those things. I think just like a sense of lightness is one thing, is one way it feels. I think a feeling of being settled, and comfortable, a sense of confidence that like I'm able to move through the world with. I certainly smile more, which is always great. Those are some of the things.
Yeah. When I think of gender euphoria, I think of the same thing too, of just like a relaxed sense of just being and not being like on guard all the time. And just like
Totally.
I can just be a sense of just being. And also a lot of smiling.
The funny thing, of course, about that suit, just to say, is that like I think I wore it like twice. I went to work in California. Like people, like who is wearing? No one's wearing a suit or a tie almost ever. Like, and then it got a couple, 2 years later, replaced by my wedding suit, which has a similar story of like stepping out and being like, "This is awesome," but still important.
Yeah. I remember the first time I got a suit. I've only had one suit. I need a new one. I need it updated. But that's a similar vibe of like looking in the mirror and being like, oh, this is what it's supposed to look like when you look in the mirror.
Yeah, right.
Such a like that's what it, I felt the same way too after top surgery of like without the like bumps, breasts. Okay. I don't know why I said bumps. It's fine. But it just like it was like looking in the mirror and I was like, oh, cool. That's what that is. Myself is in there.
I mean, I still feel that way, like wearing a t-shirt, like
You
most
too.
days. It's been, I don't know, 8 years, maybe 9 years since I had top surgery, also coming up in 1 or 2 months here. And I still feel that way when I put on a t-shirt for sure.
I love putting on a like messenger bag and have it just go like flat across. I'm like, this is the best feeling that's ever happened. It's really,
Totally.
really great. I also just want to name the like support from Naomi of like the encouragement. I always find that like having a partner, a spouse, a friend, people in our corners who are, well, actually that reminds me of a story with Joe. Do you know that? I don't know if you'll, whatever. It's about the picture where, so we were all at a Keshet Shabbaton weekend retreat with LGBTQ Jewish teens and allies. And it was at the end and we were taking all different like iterations of photos. And there was like a mask, masculine trans mask photo And I was taking the photo. And Joe said, do you want to get in to the photo to me? And I was like, no. But like in my heart, yes. But I wasn't ready. Like Joe saw it in me and was encouraging me before I was ready to do it. But like in a loving, incredible way. But that moment always sticks out to me of like, because sometimes it's hard to be seen when we're not ready to be seen. But having those loving people who encourage you and nudge you in the best way to think about those parts of our identities is so crucial to finding ourselves and connecting.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and that story features Naomi, but I could have told like 12 stories. And I mean, I have 12 stories also I could have told about Naomi, but I also have a long list of stories I could have told about Joe being that person for me. Yeah,
it's pretty cool. Joe, do you want to share a coming out or coming into self story with us?
Yeah, I've been thinking about sort of which pieces to share. And I think there's like a couple stories here, but I think the thread that I want to lift up is, I don't know, coming into an understanding of myself that involved a lot of stripping away of internalized oppression and and sort of what that has opened up. So I came out as queer in college, had been like a longtime ally, was already like gender and women's studies, queer theory was my jam. But just like thought that I was an ally because I had not yet come to understand my core orientation which is towards queer masculinity, not the like, you know, my friends I made out with casually at 17. That didn't do it for me for reasons that were not actually about me being straight. So I came out as queer and then had this period of a couple of years of like real gender confusion. Gender expression confusion, not confusion about my gender identity, but trying to like find my way into what felt like an authentic expression of queerness and like intelligibility as queer and how that mapped onto my own gender expression. There are sort of like a couple of kind of key moments in this. One is similarly being seen by another person. So I, my last year of college, went to a like radical anarchist organizing conference. It doesn't exist anymore, but connected with somebody there who was an alum of my school and had been offering a workshop teaching about gender liberation and trans identity. And we connected and I ended up inviting him back to speak on campus at a event series I was organizing. And so we hung out. He's about 9 years older than me, 9-10 years older than me. Had an enormous crush on him, you know, was just like, who's this like total brilliant babe who's like said yes to my request to come speak? Like what? And we were sitting on the beautiful, beautiful April day in Ohio. We were sitting on the edge of the like student union. And I remember I was wearing a like mini skirt. And I remember him asking me like, so like, tell me about your femme identity. What does femme mean to you? And I was like, oh, I'm not a femme. I don't think that's really me. I don't think that's really me. And he kind of was like, huh, okay. And that question really pushed me. I was like, oh, he sees something in me. And also like, why did I have so much resistance there? And what I came to understand over the course of the next couple of years was that actually a lot of what was coming up was internalized misogyny. That I had internalized this story that masculinity was inherently more transgressive, more radical, more political than femininity on an assigned female body. And I have deep, deep gratitude to mostly trans people in my life and also writers. Like Julia Serrano's Whipping Girl came out right around that time, really opened my eyes, and allowed me to notice the ways in which I had internalized this message that like my femininity couldn't be transgressive, for totally, you know, fucked up reasons. And I think then the sort of other, or the there was like a piece of that also that deepened over the ensuing years as I came into deeper relationship with other, in particular, other queer masculine people like Becky, like that person who became a very dear friend, Ace, and a handful of other folks who saw my femme and really like honored the ways in which my femininity were a source of power. And I think this has been key. Like I like developed kind of young and experienced a lot of non-consensual objectification in the context of my friendships with cis men, boys, in a way that I had internalized. It just was like, it's part of being, you know, cool, laid back, chill, you go along with it. And the thing that has felt incredibly powerful and healing and allowed me really actually to like embody and occupy my own gender in a different way is the gift of relationships that hold intimacy and sensuality without presuming access to my body as like a femme and a woman. And that has been across the board for me, relationships with queer masculine folks, where like there is an energy and a chemistry between us. It's like we see each other, we sort of can be in our genders in a very deep and embodied way together and in relation to each other. And also all of that gets to live in this deeply queer feminist relationship ethic that's like, right, I see you, I'm gonna flirt with you, I'm gonna compliment you, we can dance. And like none of that presumes any level of additional entitlement or access to my body that has just felt so, yeah, has allowed me to be more fully myself in a way that I don't know that I don't think I could have gotten to entirely on my own.
Wow. It's so, I love hearing stories about just like the power of being in relationship with other people and just how other people can affect and impact us. I love it. I just love it so much. You mentioned using femininity as a source of power. And I'm curious if you can elaborate on that. Like, what does that mean to you? And how does that kind of show up in your life?
How much shows up in my life right now is a funny question. I kind of like, gender right now kind of feels like mom.
You can still make me blush at the drop of a hat.
You know, I think for me, there's like a couple pieces. One is, this was like kind of a precursor. Shortly before I came out as queer, I had been dating a cis guy who, and we broke up, and he was not very tall. He was like an inch taller than me, maybe. And he, in sort of like classic cis, short cis guy story, had a complex about that, and didn't like me, preferred that I didn't wear heels. And I remember the first night I went out dancing after we broke up. I was like starting to think I wasn't straight, but I still like ostensibly, I hadn't like come out to anybody yet. And I remember getting ready and I put on a short skirt and these, I like short denim skirt and these hot pink stiletto peep toe pumps with black lace overlay. And I stood there in front of the mirror and I was just like, fuck yeah, and fuck you. Like, yes, it felt like a coming into my power and claiming that, like, actually, I get to decide how I present myself to the world on my own terms. I don't feel that way towards him now. He's fine. He's a good guy. Also, incidentally, a rabbi. But I think that for me, the like relationship between power and femininity is sort of about the edge and the unexpected. It's about like the surprise that people experience sometimes when I'm in, you know, heels and a skirt and start talking about my comfort with power tools or just like command a room, right? Like I feel in my power and like I have control over how, again, this comes back to some of the objectification, right? Feeling like I get to decide what parts of what I'm presenting to the world you get to consume. And actually, like, even if you think you're just looking at me and taking it in, this is all intentionally chosen. And that in and of itself feels like a source of power.
Yeah. What's coming up for me right now is just also just the power of clothing has played in all of our lives and in coming into our own senses of self and power and identity, and how gender expression, I think in general, is so crucial. And I don't know that enough people understand the importance of gender expression and how it plays into gender identity and one sense of self. So I don't know. It's just, it's on my mind. I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. What power tools do you use most often?
So not a whole lot these days, but I think my like, just, I don't know, my classic go-to sort of has my heart is a reliable circular saw.
Mm. Cool. I am not good with tools, but I have this pan that the handle always jiggles. And so I have to use like a screwdriver to tighten it. And I seriously feel so butch when I do it. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm like tightening this pan. It's like, but that's like, to me, that's like transgressing what people assume mask folks are capable of. It's like, I can't do anything more than screw a handle on a pan. So good on us for breaking those stereotypes. So I want to, and now I'm really interested to know of your stories, how they intersect with each other. So like what, like how did you, like, so you can share like how you met and, or just a significant moment in your relationship, just, cause your friendship is, I love your friendship. And so just getting an insight into more of it would be whatever you're comfortable sharing. I'm ready for.
I mean, Joe, I'm thinking about the story of how we met, but I'm also thinking about the sort of moments at the airport when you landed for the Keshe trip in Israel. Does that, maybe I'll start that story and you can cut me off or pick up wherever. I don't really, it's funny because now I'm like, what is that whole story? Here's what I remember. Right, I was in Israel studying for 10 months as a rabbinical student, and Keshet was coming, had organized this like queer Jews trip to Israel, which was amazing for me for two reasons. One is Joanna, And the second is our friend Eshe Krasnow, who's another trans Jew, an academic, and a love of my heart, for sure. And so I was going to. I was like having a hard time, for sure, having a hard time. I had a hard time that whole year. I had come out as trans sort of the year before. I had made a plan with the dean of Hebrew College that if I needed to leave, I would. And so this trip was like well timed for my for me and my just like what I needed. So I went to the airport, right? I took a Sherut, a taxi to the airport with all of my stuff. I was gonna go spend Shabbat with the tour group, and got there and, you know, met the group. And Joanna and I knew each other. We had been in community in the neighborhood where we live and had lots of connected friends, but we weren't, I don't even know if we were friends so much as like just sort of like knew who each other was. Right? Maybe we were friends. I don't know. I was dating Stephanie.
So we'd had some of those moments of like being each other's safe person out in the world.
Okay. Well, I don't remember a time. Fair. I'm like, oh, what were they? Don't tell me right now.
I'm like remembering particular nights at Queeryoke.
I know. And now I'm like, did that one happen before or after this trip?
It happened before you and Stephanie were dating. So it was before.
Okay, great. Now everyone's like, what is it? I was like, there was a particular person who was flirting with me and it wasn't quite consensual. And so Joe was helpful in those moments.
I was Becky's safe and drama-free date for the night.
That's right.
I love it.
So we get there, we meet the group, right? The group gets there. Joe comes from wherever you were. I don't know if you were, I don't remember if you were already there or not. It doesn't matter. And we're heading from the terminal where we had all met out to the tour bus, right? And like people are like schlepping their luggage and whatnot. Joe is a great packer for trips. And so I'm sure, like in my mind, what feels like there was lots of bags, I'm sure there actually weren't that many now that like we've traveled together. That all that quite a bit, but just like this moment of being like, can I, of asking Joe if I could carry her bags, like we're like exiting into the outside and I'm like, can I carry, or maybe it was getting on the bus, do you remember?
I think it was carrying them out to the bus,
yeah, where I just was like, can I carry your bags? And Joe was like, I have it, I got it. No, right? Because like you're very capable of carrying your own luggage. It probably was like really nice luggage that wheels, etc. Like you definitely didn't need my help. Right. And I was like, no, no, no. Can I carry your luggage? Can I carry your bag? And Joe was like, yeah, you can carry. It was very graceful. I was like, yeah, you can carry my bag. Because like really what I needed in that moment was this like recognition of whatever. So now I'm like, oh, yeah, of course we'd had some of those moments. Like whatever there was that was like in this burgeoning, budding friendship. And also like the ways in which my gender and my sense of self comes alive in relationship with other people and how hard I had been working to keep it alive, absent those relationships. And then we spent the bus ride down to wherever we were going, you know, sharing headphones, watching TV or whatnot. And there was a lot that happened after that. I don't know what you want to add or pick up on there.
Well, I'm thinking about what you said before we started recording about the sort of moments of coming out and not coming out, which is the origin of our friendship starts where I was working for Keshet at the time. Becky was working at like one of his internship placements during rabbinical school at a local synagogue, and he hired Keshet to come in and lead some, you know, queer programming for the youth. For the youth. I didn't know him at all. My boss basically was like, hey, can you take this intake call? Sure. Gave me like no context or additional information. And so having this call, this initial intake call. And I remember asking him like, so are there any, and I may be relevant, like Becky wasn't using he pronouns at the time. So I had no indicators that he was queer. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh, something like, oh, so have the kids been, do they know queer people? Are there queer people in the community? Like, what kind of context or knowledge do people have for who queer people are? And I remember him kind of hesitating, being like, well, they know me. And I was like, okay, well, I feel foolish. And then fast forward a couple weeks, and we had like our first in-person meeting, and I walked in to we met at Hebrew College. And Becky, the facilitation team was Becky, me, my boss, and then a colleague who's also a trans rabbinical student at the time, now rabbi. And I knew him already, didn't know Becky. I remember just walking in and having this moment of being sort of bowled over, where I was like, oh, not only did I make a fool of myself professionally, like that, what Dayenu, right? Like that would have been enough. I'm like trying to like, I'm coming into sort of my early 20s, coming into my professional self, but also like, damn, he's hot. Like shit. And I remember feeling really nervous. And then from, I think at the end of that training that we led together, we sort of had a moment of like, oh, we should like get together sometime. Let's like hang out sometime. And out that then was the period from like that point until we were in Israel together. It was like starting to build. And it was interesting, right? Becky had this experience in Israel that was really hard for his own particular reasons, and the ways in which like me showing up was, and us showing up was well-timed. And for me, I have been asked to staff a trip to Israel as someone with like really deeply complicated relationship to Israel. I was like probably the furthest left person on the staff at the time. And I was like, I don't want to be like I just felt, it did not sit easily with me to be leading that trip. And, I was so nervous, just nervous about like how it was gonna, like, would I be okay staffing, right? Holding together this group, this program. I was a young woman. Most of the participants were older than me. I just felt very aware of these power dynamics and that I was needed to walk this very precarious line professionally, politically. And I remember when I saw Becky, and like we'd emailed a little bit before then, but just like knowing that he was going to be there in theory, and then this moment of like, oh, we see each other. And I think actually like those, that first Shabbat, the drive down to the Negev, and then like we shared a room and the time that we spent together. What really stands out to me is actually a like somatic awareness of like noticing my body settling in proximity to you, being like, oh, I don't even know you that well yet, but like, I'm safe with you. You are a safe place for me to like have all of this messiness, and uncertainty and political complexity. And that was such a profound, like, grounding presence for me for that trip.
I'm like thinking in my head, I'm like, what are themes that are coming out about our friendship? And they're not, these are not, you know, mutually exclusive. I'm like, okay, great. Consensual objectification. And then this like somatic experience of relief and safety. So far, we'll see what else comes up.
Yeah. I mean, those are two pretty big ones. I'm just thinking about, this idea about how our bodies know so much, like even like just like our bodies can tell us when we're anxious. You know what I mean, like you instinctively knew like that you could relax even though you didn't know each other that well. And I just think it's so incredible how in tune our bodies are and how much we have to pay attention to them to know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I have two responses to that.
Yeah.
One is like a professional response, which is like, yes, of course. And to that end, actually, like, there was a somatics class that was offered online during COVID that like I wanted to take, that like Joe and I took at the same time. And like we did it from our own houses, but like we took it at the same time because I felt like I needed. So I mean, you were interested. I didn't drag you into it, but like I was like, oh, I'm gonna need help here. So that's one. And then just, yeah, there's a lot that my body tells me about my relationship with Joe all the time and other people. But yes,
But it's the two of you on this podcast right now, so it's
that's
okay to
right.
focus
Yeah.
on that relationship,
Yeah.
and it doesn't negate any of the other relationships. So what like time frame is this all happening? Like what year?
2011.
Yep.
So it's been, did you do something for your decade anniversary of friendship? I guess that was in the middle of COVID.
We talked about it. Yeah, this actually feels related to something I was just reflecting on, which is that like, our friendship, we live really close to each other, right? We're in the same neighborhood, except for the period of time where he moved to LA. But many of the, our friendship has really like had key moments of deepening and connection in sort of intensive immersive experiences away from our like regular day-to-day life. So this Israel trip, we staffed a lot of Shabbatonim, youth retreats together, you know, been like conference buddies, things like that. And yeah, we've done like a lot of co-facilitating, et cetera, together. And one of the things that I think I feel confident speaking for both of us learned through that is that, or like we developed this like very comfortable intimacy, right? We pretty much always share a room when we are working or traveling together. And that's very much born of like physical proximity and like somatic awareness of each other. Like it just, you know, I think both of us have this sense of like where we are in the room and sort of what's, I certainly can speak for myself. Like I can
Yeah.
sense, you know, sort of where Becky is at and how he's doing from how he's breathing, where his, you know, how his shoulders are resting, et cetera. And we've developed ways of also like helping ground each other in hard moments. And right when the pandemic started, it was a moment of a lot of change in both of our lives in a variety of ways. Changes for both of us professionally. Becky's oldest kiddo had been born the fall prior. Like shifts in our shared social circle, people leaving, just like a real kind of mix up in some of the community and chosen family relationships, dynamics, et cetera. And then one of the, I think, like things that was difficult for us and we spent time talking about and trying to figure out was like, oh, what does it look like for us to continue to like carve out time for this way of being with each other that we know is really important and meaningful in this moment where like there was a while we were in a pod together, then there were some times where we weren't, right? Like, how are we bringing the safety and well-being of the rest of our families into this, their comfort levels, and then just sort of the broader world, this moment of isolation. And so I remember us kind of talking about and trying to think like, oh, could we like go away together for sometime around our 10-year friendship anniversary? And I think for a variety of reasons that probably would have felt really different if it hadn't been for, you know, at that point, like whatever, a year and a half of COVID might have felt differently possible, but we weren't able to make that happen. Yeah, I think probably it was both. It was COVID. It was also like parenting.
Totally.
other like family relationship dynamics. Yeah.
There's always year 15.
Yeah.
Totally. It could happen.
Good.
I'm game.
Great.
You heard it here first, folks. They're both game. As you both have been talking, I want you in all of your spare time that you both have to write a manual on like how to like deepen your friendship and like the somatic ways of like checking in with each other. Like it would be so, I think it would be so helpful for everybody to learn how to be in relationship with each other in the deeper way like that. Have the two of you ever had like a really big fight where you weren't sure you were going to come back from it?
No,
definitely not.
That's
There
great.
Have been some moments, there have definitely been some moments where I've been like, are we still, is our relationship still the same? Like, and not that, or like, where are we with regards to like this baseline that was really developed like pre-pandemic and pre-children? And where I've been like, are, you know, and it's a question, like, are we got, you know, I'm like, are we going to go back to that? You know, what's going to happen when our kids are like 6 and 8? And we've talked about that too, but I've never felt like our friendship is a question,
No.
or that I can be, or that like I can trust you with anything that's happening in my world at the drop of a hat, for sure.
Yeah, and I would say actually Becky is one of a handful of relationships I have where I feel like I've had real safety and security to test some of my own growing edges, like around being able to both like articulate and name the things I need explicitly and ask that those needs be met, or request, like not assume that they can be, but just say like, hey, here's a thing that I need. And kind of the underlying of that, or the implication of reflecting when like, oh, there's something I'm not getting here, that historically has been hard for me to bring in my like closest relationships, which, you know, I've spent lots of therapy unpacking, but Becky is one of the people where I'm like, oh yeah, like I actually know he's not going to go anywhere, like I can take this risk here, and I really deeply trust that our relationship can hold it. And it's helped many, many, many things to yeah, that just helps reinforce that trust.
That could be a chapter in your book, Building Trust.
I do feel like I'm in the era of my friends all publishing books. I also feel very clear I have no capacity to write one.
Yeah.
So, you know.
In the imaginary book that, listen, it's a dream. There's no timeline. Maybe on your 15th friendiversary, you go on a writing retreat and that's when you write the book. Who knows? Who knows?
I know. I have a suggestion for the cover of the book, though.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So, Dubs, you know this, right? That like Joe and I would do the consent workshop on the Keshet Shabbatonim on these youth retreats. And like the youth would at the end often offer us scenarios. And there were lots of scenarios that like I wouldn't do in other places, and things that like were borderline uncomfortable, but never crossing a boundary. If there was, I would have said so. And there was one scenario about aliens. Was it aliens or sea creatures? It was aliens.
It's aliens.
And just like the way Joe started moving her body made me so uncomfortable. And not in like an oh sexy kind of way, just in a like I'm totally freaked out here kind of way. So I feel like the cover of the book would be like an alien doing this like arm thing that Joe was doing.
It's maybe worth naming that I have somewhat disproportionately long limbs for my height. So like, I think that's probably part of it, that I'm like moving my arms all weird. And then it's like, oh no, they're really long.
Yeah.
Listen, I would read a book with an alien on the cover about friendship. So how did both of you get involved with Keshet? Like, what are your, like, you know, stand on one foot quick, like, how did you get involved, both of you?
Yeah. I called to have them do this training.
Ah, that was your first touch point?
Yeah, that was my
Okay.
first touch point, I think.
Cool.
At least that's the story I'm telling, and I'm sticking with it.
Great.
There didn't have been a previous Keshet training at Hebrew College when you were there. I don't know if you remember that, but...
Oh, I do remember that, because the person who was your supervisor at the time asked me a really awkward question, which we're not going to go into. So yes, fine. That was maybe that. So then that was it. Great. A training at Hebrew College.
I actually first found Keshet my first summer in Boston at Pride. I went to Pride with my best friend from college, who's why I live in Massachusetts. Speaking of gender confusion, she's also a femme, and we would go out sometimes. She's partnered, and she and I would go out sometimes, and like I would like butch up when I would go out with her. I would like be her, you know, butch for the night. But we went to Pride, and I'm thinking of it because I also remember wearing like these cargo pants that I'm pretty sure I still own somewhere that are like three sizes too big. But that I would, yeah, whatever. There, it's like a real moment in time and my gender expression. But went to Pride, and I remember my friend being like, hey, there's like a queer Jewish organization over here. And I went and I like signed up on the list, and the organizer at the time, Orly, I remember called me to set up a one-to-one, and I was like, oh, I'm not living in Boston right now. Like, I was living in Worcester at the time. I was like, I'm not living in Boston, but like, maybe I'll reconnect. And then I moved to Boston a couple months later and promptly forgot about it. And then the recession hit, and I quit my job that had been terrible, working for a racist, homophobic, transphobic DV agency. So I didn't particularly have a job. I was fresh out of college, middle of the recession. I was canvassing door to door to just kind of like get by, but knew that wasn't what I wanted to do long term. And on a whim, applied to Jewish Organizing Fellowship, Community Organizing Fellowship, that matches you with a placement site if you're accepted. And I had gone in having done a lot of reflecting about what it would mean to be an outsider organizer as like a white Jew from, you know, professional upper middle class background doing racial justice or economic justice organizing or environmental justice organizing. I'm not from Boston. And then I got matched with Keshet, and I was like, oh, I can work on my own shit and in my own communities too. That's real. So got a job working for that organizer who had called me for the one-to-one I didn't take. And yeah, was there for almost 8 years.
I'm pretty sure your last day was my first day. Is that right?
Was it? It might have been.
I think so. Because I took a train to Boston, up to Boston from New York. Is it up? I'm not good at job. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was your last day. I just remember, or maybe second to last day, but so we were ships in the night, but was so thrilled to get to that both of you were at all the Shabbatanim, or not all of them, but all the ones that I went to. The first one was the East Coast one, and I just remember I was in tears the whole time because I had never been in a like explicitly queer and explicitly Jewish space before. And Joe, I don't know if you remember this, but like multiple times throughout the weekend, you're like, are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm fine. I was so overwhelmed because I couldn't even talk because I was like on the verge of tears. And like, you know, the like circle rituals of like, now I don't remember how they go. It's like they'll like follow you and lead with you, whatever, you know what I'm talking about? And like the, I'll believe the truth of myself, no matter how beautiful it is. I burst out crying the first time I heard that. I was like, oh no, I have so much work to do. It's like, I have a lot of work I need to do. but just so, just like how, maybe certainly not to the degree that you two have with each other, but I also felt like a somatic, like I, like these, the two of you, like I can feel safe with the two of you and ask you questions. And Becky, you were the first like other like Jewish person I had ever met who'd also had top surgery. So that was like an extremely significant moment in my Jewish identity, and how you did my like Jewish, my Hebrew name change ceremony at a different show. Like, we're just like so special to me of like to be in really. And Joe, I reach out to you and I'm like, can you talk through this idea with me of like, just like a real mentor, you know, just, I don't know. I just feel so lucky that I have both of you that I can trust and I vent to you about things, and that you just inherently get it in ways that lots of people don't particularly understand certain dynamics or identities. And so it's really special to have you in my life in that way. And also just to learn from the both of you, both professionally, of like, how do you command a room? How do you facilitate? How do you kind of navigate moments professionally? And then also, you know, bearing witness to your friendship through all these years, like how to show up and be a good friend. So it's like, so all of which is to say, I will be the publicist once you've written your book of like getting people to read it, because I feel very strongly about it. So Joe, what year was that when you started at Kesha?
I started at Kesha in 2009.
Okay, great. Interesting. It is interesting, but it's interesting. In that, because I started January of 2017.
Yeah. Okay. So then, that was our overlap. My last actual day on staff, like full time staff, was 12/31/2016. But I did some consulting for a little while in the like transitional time. So I was probably in the office on that first day.
Yeah.
But yeah, probably packing up and yeah.
You invited me to go to lunch with you and whoever else you were going with. And I said no, because I was scared.
Oh.
I was nervous. I was like, I'm too nervous to go out to lunch, which is so silly. It's like, go out to lunch with your new colleagues. It's fine. So I am mindful of time, but I do, before I move us into our lightning round, I do want to hear just a little bit about the Jewish Liberation Fund and the incredible work that you're doing. And Joe, and then Becky, I want to hear about the Trans Halakha Project. So whatever either of you want to share about either of those things, I want to learn more about them. And I know our listeners do too.
Great. The Jewish Liberation Fund is a progressive Jewish fund organizing money to grow and sustain the Jewish left. We fund movement building work. We fund without the kinds of restrictions around Israel-Palestine that a lot of other Jewish institutional funders impose, which we are really just acutely aware of how important that is right now, in this moment of immense polarization, that like our grantees know that we want to be their partners for the long term in this work. We're not like, we're funded by our movement. We are, all of our funders, our donors, from grassroots to our major donors, are deeply values aligned. Like, we are funding ourselves, which is not the case for a lot of the rest of the Jewish philanthropic sector that supports and makes possible the work of the Jewish left.
That's awesome. Do you know the organization, or maybe I've asked you about it before, Oath.Vote?
I don't think so.
Let's talk offline about it, because I think
great.
We'll talk offline about it, but it's a really cool fundraising mechanism that may or may not be relevant.
Cool.
Okay, Becky.
The Translaca Project, which is housed at Svara, seeks to empower trans Jews and nourish trans Jews by putting them at the center of halachic exploration, and putting our lived experience at the center of questions of what it means to live Jewishly and what it means to live out Torah. And we do that by bringing together a group of folks to write tshuvot, answers, literally, but responses to questions of law. This year we're writing on family building from a trans perspective. I'm playing along with a title of mine, which is I Carried the Sperm, Avenues to Jewish Parentage. We'll see if that goes anywhere. So writing tshuvot, we do this by, we put out a compendium of blessings and rituals for trans lives called Tefillah Trans. You can find that on Svara's website. Also, last cycle's tshuvot are there too. And we host community programs. And, you know, no big deal. We're just changing Judaism.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You both are doing such important, incredible work. And again, if I haven't made it clear, I just am in awe of both of you and appreciate you both personally, professionally, friendly, all of the above. I wish that we had more time so I could ask you a lot of more questions about all the amazing work you do. So maybe next season you'll come back and we'll continue the conversation. But in the meantime, I'm going to move us into our lightning round, which is meant to be lighthearted and fun. I was called in a few seasons ago that my questions were too binary, so I have changed them to be open-ended, which makes it a little bit more challenging to be quick. But do your best. You can also pass if you don't want to answer a question. It doesn't matter which one of you answers first. And we'll go from there. So what's the name of your superhero alter ego?
Oh, this feels hard.
I'm like, super dad is the best I can come up with.
That's great. There's no wrong answers. Super dad.
This is like my worst kind of create. Like, I'm terrible at naming things, pithy names for things. But you know, probably like, I don't know, some sort of like I would fly. I'd be able to fly. I'd be wearing motorcycle boots and like some sort of really hot little black leather skirt. Somebody else can name that. I don't know what it is.
Love it. Everyone, drop your names below. I don't know. Okay. Where is your favorite place to think?
The ocean.
The beach. Yeah.
Maybe that's where you go for your 15th. Okay. Who is an influential queer person in your life?
I'm going to say Ace, my friend who I mentioned before, who's a chosen family member, teacher, mentor. I consider myself in like his political lineage.
I'm going with Naomi Sobel, my spouse, for teaching me so many things about queerness.
I love that.
Oh, man. What? No, sorry, Diana.
Sorry.
What is a song that you can listen to on repeat forever?
It's not Charlie on the MTA, because that's what Edie wants to listen to over and over again right now. Her younger sibling's name is Charlie. Closer to Fine, for sure.
Classic.
There are two that immediately came to mind. Probably neither of them forever. But one was Before He Cheats, which is just such a good go-to, like, get that angry energy out song.
For sure.
And the other hard repeat for me recently has been Protector, Beyonce's Protector from Cowboy Carter.
Great. As you both were sharing your songs, I had the idea of making a playlist,
yes,
including all the songs from this season. So you were here first for this idea, everybody. Okay. And we already kind of talked about this, but I have to ask it because it's on my list. What does identity euphoria feel like to you? So you can just say, I already answered, or you can say it again, or you could pass.
I think just like a combination of like relief and joy and smiling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a feeling of like, I can take on whatever comes my way.
So speaking of cargo pants, I had these, I had this like camouflage pair of cargo pants that I wore everywhere. And I remember saying once to my friend Molly, like I was like, I can do anything in these pants. And she made fun of me for like a decade, but it's like, it truly was like, I felt so in my body in those pants that it really was a feeling of that. Okay. Where do you find joy?
Lifting, having things and putting them back down.
My toddler's giggles.
Aw, I love that. Okay, there was one binary question I simply could not get rid of, which is bagels or donuts?
Bagels.
I got bagels.
Great. Now, either you're saying that because you know who's interviewing you, or you really mean, I don't think you would do that. You really mean bagels, which is,
oh yeah,
ideal.
I mean, Becky's a New Yorker and I don't have much of a sweet tooth, so.
There you go. Thank you both so much for joining me and for sharing all that you shared and for all that you do. I just really appreciate you both. I feel like I like adequately tell you like once a year, maybe how much you both mean to me. So just be on the lookout for the next time, but, just thank you both so much. And thank you for coming out.
Thanks for having us. I've been looking forward to this. This was so fun.
Yay. Me too. Thank you for coming out.